What is up, guys, and welcome to this edition of the Chi-Town Hockey Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Golden. We have a lot of news to get to today, but first I want to tell you how to get in touch with the show or ask any questions. Instagram at chitownhockey.pod, Twitter at chitownpod, the email is chitownhockeypod@gmail.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at jakegolden777. Now again, lots of news to get into today. Gary Bettman has spoken, Bill Daly has spoken, and a lot of news has been released in the past couple days since I've last done an episode. And we'll get into Gary and Bill's statements later, but first, it's been reported that the NHL has monitored the NFL's virtual draft and could follow their lead, and the NHL is also considering holding the draft before the season resumes, which means it would be conducted in June. And looking at the NFL, they got great ratings, but the NHL draft isn't even comparable to the NFL draft. It isn't even comparable. In the NFL, you have players coming in and making an impact tomorrow, and these players are drafted right out of college in and around the age of 22 in the NFL. They can come and play for the team that first year and make an immediate impact. That's why it's so much more, it's a much bigger event than the NHL draft. And then in the NHL, you know, players are around 18, 19 years old, and they're around the age of a high school senior or a college freshman, really. And these players still need to develop, and they need to gain that NHL and AHL experience before they can really come in and hopefully make an impact on your team. And in the NHL, it's a process. It's a long process in the NHL to bring prospects in and have them make an impact on your team. The NFL is completely different. When you draft a player there, like I said, the success of your franchise can change in a snap with that player on your roster. And one good thing about having the draft before, or really any time during the year, is the teams are preparing for the draft all year round. There's no one time in a year that the teams are looking at the draft, so it's illogical to have the draft before the NHL season resumes. And the other day I put out a Twitter poll on the podcast account at Chi-Town Hockey Pod on Instagram and Chi-Town Pod on Twitter. The majority of the votes said that they would rather see the draft take place before the NHL season. But that's interesting to me because it really doesn't matter when the draft takes place, but one bad thing about holding the NHL draft before hockey itself, and even the NHL is back, but outside of the NHL, really before the whole sport of hockey, and really the whole world is back, you don't have the scouting combine, there's no up-to-date game footage of prospects, and you don't have the up-to-date information that teams have had in the past. Because if you look at a prospect coming in from the OHL or whatever league they may be from, that up-to-date information as a player's height, weight, position, during this quarantine period, you don't know if a player has gained 20 pounds, lost 20 pounds, grown an inch, you don't know. And now, for the Blackhawks at least, without John McDonough for the first time in 13 years, Stan Bowman will fully be in charge of the 2020 draft for the first time in his career with the Blackhawks. And he's been good at the draft. He's obviously had hiccups like everyone does. But he's been relatively good. And that John McDonough is now out of the picture, it will be interesting to see how Stan Bowman runs the organization. And will his picks be different without McDonough? Because in the past couple days, there have been a lot of stories coming out, and it's been reported a lot that Stan Bowman has had directory the last couple years from John McDonough, and he's had to have transactions go through Amik Isaac, who would then report these to John McDonough, who would then give the all-clear to Bowman. So it's a long process for Stan Bowman, who couldn't just make a transaction if he wanted to, and they had to be approved by John McDonough. So John McDonough was interfering a lot on the hockey side since at least 2015. And now you can make a guess that this was Stan Bowman's contract, but you don't know if the contract that Stan Bowman gave to Brent Seabrook was that Stan Bowman, or was that John McDonough interfering with the hockey side. And the question we all have is, we all thought Bowman was to blame for the downfall, but was it John McDonough? Did he interfere too much after the first two playoff round exits in 2017? Did he interfere too much even after the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup in 2015? During this period from 2015 to 2020, it's been reported a lot that John McDonough has interfered with Stan Bowman and his transactions. So, if all the facts come out, it could surface that this wasn't Stan Bowman's fault, and the fans have been blaming the wrong person. And that might be one of the reasons Stan Bowman doesn't talk about this too much, and why John McDonough didn't give the details on Stan Bowman's contract. Because John McDonough and Stan Bowman both know that the fans are not a fan of Stan Bowman. So maybe that's why they're not talking, because they both know that this was John McDonough. And John McDonough doesn't want to be the one blamed for the downfall of the Blackhawks. And now that John McDonough's gone, there's one more question. Is this now Stan Bowman's team? Did they cut John McDonough because of everything that went on with the power struggle between Danny Wirtz, Stan Bowman, Al McIsaac? Is this now Stan Bowman's team that he can run freely? Does he finally have the freedom to run the team how he wants? And will it succeed if he does? And it will be something to watch over the course of the next couple of years, and especially the next couple of months, as the search for the new president continues, and even when a new president comes in. And like I said, with the new info on John McDonough directing Stan Bowman through the years, will the Blackhawks hire president of hockey operations just to keep the hockey side, and the business side, the business side? Because if you have the business side interfering with the hockey side like John McDonough was, John McDonough was a baseball guy. He came over from the Chicago Cubs. Baseball was his thing. He came over to help the Blackhawks on the business side of things, not the hockey side of things. So if they hire a hockey operations president to keep the hockey side on the hockey side, will the Blackhawks get better? Will that change in a model of the front office? Will that help the Blackhawks? Will that help Stan Bowman more than he was helped by John McDonough? And they can use this kind of format just like the Cubs did. And if you look at the Chicago Cubs, I know some of you guys might be Chicago White Sox fans, but if you look at the Chicago Cubs, Theo Epstein came in for the baseball side of things, and then they had a business side of things. And it turned out great. For some of you guys who don't know, the Cubs won the 2016 World Series. So it worked out great. And then on the website Second City Hockey I was looking at the other day, they ran a poll, and it asked fans which type of hire would they like to see, an outside hire or an internal hire. The majority of the votes were for an outside hire, actually. So fans are showing that they believe that a fresh set of eyes could help the Blackhawks. A hire finally not from within could benefit the team and its success. When you have an executive who's been hired from within, they are accustomed to the way things are done from when they were in their original position with that team. In this case, it would be the Blackhawks. They're most likely going to keep things the way they are. They're going to keep things that way that they're accustomed to, that way that they know. And if an outside hire were to take place, things are most likely going to change. A new president would transition this franchise to a point where he/she believes it can win, and the current status of the Blackhawks isn't good. Things need to change, and if they don't, then things most likely will remain the same. And the only way to change things is to hire from the outside and let a new president decide what he wants to do with personnel, what he wants to do with Stan Bowman, Jeremy Colleton, Al McIsaac, the hundreds of other Blackhawks employees from the front office to the bench and the coaches to the ice crew. The only way to get out of the situation the Blackhawks are in is to hire from the outside and let that change come in and let people adapt to this new change and change the way things are run. Because John McDonough came in, changed the way things were ran in the Blackhawks in 2007. It's time now that things are changed. It's time now that the one goal campaign is out, because it's no longer a one goal of winning the Stanley Cup like it was when John McDonough came in. It is now a one goal of even just making that second wild card spot to sneak into the playoffs and win a round, maybe. It's no longer that Stanley Cup. So things need to change for the Blackhawks to get better, just like they changed in 2007 with John McDonough coming in and being hired by Rocky Wirtz to turn this team around. And so far, Danny Wirtz has done things correctly as the VP and as a governor and as the Blackhawks representative, so I'm not taking anything away from the work he's done and the fact that he could remain the president. However, I don't think the search is going to land on him, because he already has so much on his plate with all the aforementioned responsibilities that he has, being a governor, as a representative, as the vice president of the Blackhawks. And then on top of all of those, he also runs the beverage side of the Wirtz family business. So he already has so much on his plate But if and the Blackhawks, I really don't believe, are going to land on Danny Wirtz for the presidency, and I'm sure we'd all be surprised if that really did happen. The Blackhawks now need to do their due diligence, they need to take time to look at all the options, and they cannot rush things. This needs to be taken as seriously as it is, and with the pause, the team has the time to talk to all the options. Go out and talk to Eddie Olczyk. Go out and talk to Bill Zito. Go out and talk to Mike Gillis. Figure out what they want, what their vision is for this franchise. Figure out what they're willing to take, what they're willing to do, what steps they're going to take to make this Blackhawks team a winning team again. And that needs to happen. It can't just be the front runners, because you have no idea the visions and the knowledge of some other options. Like I said, Bill Zito, Mike Gillis, Eddie Olczyk, all front runners, but you don't know if there's that Doug Wilson over in San Jose who wants to come over. He's been mentioned before, but still, he's not exactly a front runner. You have Shane Doan. Is he willing to come in and take a front office position after retiring from hockey? You have all these other options that you can look at, and the Blackhawks need to take their time to do things right. They can't rush things, and they need to make sure they're doing it right, because if they don't do this right, things are going to end up really bad for the Blackhawks. Alright guys, I'm going to go ahead and take a quick break here. I will be back with you guys in just a few moments. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Chi-Town Hockey Podcast. You just heard my thoughts on the NHL draft and the Blackhawks presidential hirings. So now I'm going to go ahead and get into some of the more general NHL news that's been released over the past couple days. Some of you have probably seen it, some of you might not have yet, but anyways, I'm going to go ahead and get into that. And it's been reported that the NHL is close to reopening. And it's reported that the NHL and the NHLPA are now close to reaching an agreement to begin play, and the reported target is early July. The NHL has now abandoned the plan to host games at non-NHL cities and are now focusing on looking to around 4 hub cities to host games, and it's looking like there are 8 to 9 front runners for those host cities. And it's also reported that the NHL is to head straight to the Stanley Cup playoffs when play resumes and regular season is to be abandoned, but there's also supposed to be a play-in, because it is reported that the 24-team format is the front-runner, meaning that the top 2 teams in each division were to get a bye. All the other teams would play each other in the first round out of 5, looking like a best-of-3 series, and there would be a play-in match, looking like, between all the teams in the division. So, if hockey does resume in early July, you'd have to think that players are already relocating back to their base cities at the moment. And then there's obviously that 2-week quarantine that they have to do that's mandatory. Then a 2 to 3 week mini training camp to get the players back in shape, because not every player has a gym at their house. And that should take place in like mid-June-ish. And then starting around July 7th to the 15th, it's looking like play could finally resume, beginning that play-in series or a Stanley Cup playoffs with 5 rounds. Now, the NHL possibly has some reopening rules. One would be players must wear full face masks when not on the ice, and this would obviously go against the rule of not being allowed to wear full face masks in the NHL unless it's required due to injury. Secondly, wingers must remain 2 feet from the dot on faceoffs. 3, coaches and trainers behind the bench would be required to wear a mask/face covering. The fourth one, you have no fighting, so the linesmen won't have to break up any scrums with multiple players being in that kind of confined area right there with all those players together. 5 would be no spitting, which I personally think is going to be very hard to remember. And then 6, this is not a disclosed rule. The NHL did not release this rule yet. But based on the past, I would have to think that players would be assigned their own water bottles and they would not be allowed to share them. Similar to how the Penguins assigned players water bottles /Gatorade bottles when the mumps outbreak took place in 2017, I believe it is. But something for me is looking at some of these rules, like These could possibly change the outcome of games. If a player is not accustomed to a full face mask, it could affect their play. If players must remain stationary and 2 feet from the dot on faceoffs, the puck may not be retrieved as soon, and there will be more space in between players when the puck is dropped, and you're wasting time having to chase the puck because you're farther away from the puck on faceoffs. So in order for the rest of the 1920 NHL season to keep fairness, the rules should have to remain the same as the first section of the season, because if they're different, how do you know things are really fair? And like I said, the NHL has now started to think about brackets, and the NHL is considering the 16, 20, and 24 team playoff brackets. And on a 24 team playoff bracket, the one that is currently the front runner, like I said, the Blackhawks would make the Stanley Cup playoffs as the 23rd seed. So that is definitely some good news for Blackhawks fans, as upsets are going to happen. If a team runs into a red hot Corey Crawford, then hell, the Blackhawks can make a run at it. But not a lot of people are on board with the Blackhawks being handed a playoff spot that they didn't earn, because we are not that many games above 500, and we didn't earn this playoff spot. And in an article written on The Athletic by Pierre LeBrun, he states, "I don't think the 2014 play-in format sits well with everyone. There are some on the player side, but also among team executives who feel it doesn't pass the smell test as far as fairness to reward Chicago and Montreal with a ticket to the season-ending dance, a.k.a. the Stanley Cup playoffs. Under one proposed model that was circulated, Pittsburgh would face Montreal in a play-in series, presumably best of three, and the 15-point gap between teams certainly noticeable. But you can imagine, if you're the Penguins, you're probably a little worried Carey Price stands on his head for 48 hours and ends your season. Hey, upsets happen in a parity-filled league. Just ask Tampa Bay last spring. But is it fair that a Montreal team which traded away pending UFAs before the trade deadline, a clear indicator of where the Habs felt their season was headed, now gets to come back in? Not that the Canadiens nor the Blackhawks have lobbied for any of this, not to my knowledge. I'm sure they'd be fine to play if they're asked to, but this isn't something either organization dreamed up. This would be from the NHL's head office. And I get it from the league's perspective. Having 24 teams return to play reaches out to a lot of markets. You can create as big a splash as you can when and if you return to play. And you've got two gigantic fan bases in Chicago and Montreal. Even with no fans in the stands in the four hub cities, engaging those fan bases in the lead up to the season resuming would help create more buzz. You can't argue with that. But purely from a fairness aspect, I can also see the argument that the Blackhawks and Habs don't deserve to be involved. Obviously, if Chicago knew on February 24th it might still have a chance to play playoff hockey this season, it wouldn't have traded Robin Leonard to Vegas. Let's be real. That's why I think maybe a 20-team return, which also has been discussed, would maybe make more sense. The play-in could be 7-10 and 8-9 on each side. Or if you're adamant to bringing back 24 teams, is there a way to have some round-robin games within the hub city group of teams to determine the playoff bracket? I think that's something else that's been discussed. That way you're forcing Montreal and Chicago to get on a crazy run to get in. No easy answers to any of this. Whatever format the return to play committee comes up with won't please everyone. So he mentioned Carey Price. And Corey Crawford can win a game for you, too. And he showed that he can show up multiple times this season. But he did point out, if the Blackhawks felt they could play playoff hockey, they most likely wouldn't have traded Robin Leonard. No disrespect to Corey Crawford there, but they most likely wouldn't have traded him to Vegas. And really, the bottom line here is the Blackhawks just don't deserve a playoff spot. And as a Blackhawks fan, I hate to say that, and I want to see the Blackhawks in a playoff spot like most of you guys, but if they upset a team who could really make a run for it, such as Colorado, even Edmonton, that's going to upset that team and that fan base. That's going to make that team very angry, and even if the Blackhawks don't make it to the Cup Final, which, I mean, they most likely won't, let's face it, they don't deserve to be able to play playoff hockey. If the Blackhawks aren't good enough, Jeremy Colleton shouldn't get playoff experience. And these young players shouldn't get playoff experience because they didn't play the way they were supposed to. Jeremy Collinson didn't coach the way he was supposed to get the Blackhawks in the playoffs. So they don't deserve to be a playoff team this year. Even with an asterisk over it saying that it was because of a 24-team format, they would make it as the 23rd seed. That speaks something. The 23rd seed out of 24 teams. That is terrible. Alright, so back in the model, the top two teams from each division would get a first-round bye, while the other teams play a best-of-five series to move to the second round. And if the NHL were to jump straight into the playoffs, which is what's being reported, the model that I've seen for the 24-team format is the Blackhawks would most likely play the Oilers in the first round, which would be a great matchup because you got Connor McDavid going against Patrick Kane. And whoever wins the Oilers series would then play the Central number 2 seed, the Dallas Stars, in the second round. And it's reported, like I said, that this would include rounds being best of 3 for at least that first play-in round. Okay, so I did say that Gary Bettman has spoken and Bill Daly has spoken. So Gary Bettman spoke in the San Jose Hall the other day to tons of reporters, San Jose personnel, and in his statement he said, "I believe if the right time comes and in the right circumstances, based on all the options that we're considering and our ability to execute them, we'll get this season done. I don't want to sound Pollyanna, but canceling is too easy a solution. That means you stop working hard to do all the things that we're doing, and I untimely believe that there will be an opportunity. I would like to bring a conclusion to this season. It's got to be fair, it's got to have integrity, and we have to do it over the summer on some modified basis, then we'll do it on that basis." Now, something that speaks to me is, in that statement, he said, canceling is too easy a solution, and I completely agree with Gary Bettman. He is not going to sit back in his chair and say, just cancel the season. That is not Gary Bettman. He's going to work hard to get the fans what they want and get the fans what they pay for. Now, Bill Daly was interviewed by Pierre LeBrun, and after Gary Bettman's statement was released, Bill Daly then spoke with him, and he stated, "Look, I think there's some optimism. The trending is positive right now in most of our markets. We have businesses and economies opening up, and that's a good thing. Don't know yet what it means to us, but we're going in a positive direction." Now, something here is Bill Daly's statement is a lot. It doesn't sound as optimistic as Gary Bettman's does. Gary Bettman is sitting here saying that he believes there will be an opportunity, he's already discussing things that are going on, and he wants to open the season back up. Bill Daly is sitting here saying there's some optimism, and he doesn't know what it means. Now, Gary Bettman was sitting there talking in front of the whole hall, in front of a ton of reporters, in front of a crowd. Bill Daly was talking to one person. But still, as a fan, you don't want to hear that you think there's some optimism, and he doesn't know what it means yet. Because you're the deputy commissioner of the NHL. You gotta start to know what it means if you want to reopen the season back up and if you want to make that money. Because this isn't just anything. If they cancel the season right now, the NHL is going to lose $1.3 billion in hockey-related revenue. That is crazy. Welcome back to the Chi-Town Hockey Podcast. You just heard the statements from Bill Daly and Gary Bettman on the return of the NHL. And going back to both of their statements and the NHL reopening rules, you can't help but think that this is a contact sport. You have hitting, spitting, and the rule of no spitting. Players are accustomed to doing it. They just are. And for players, getting out of that rhythm will be hard. To have to worry about playing their hardest every game, and then having to worry about not being able to spit? Personally, I'm just not sure that this is really going to work. It's been pointed out on many other podcasts, articles, talk shows, all the things I just talked about. Spitting, hitting, sharing water bottles. What happens when one player, one coach, one trainer tests positive? Because for that one player to sit in quarantine, that's already 2 weeks right there. And you can't just stop the playoffs because one player gets it. Because you've already just started them. So you can't stop them for another 2 weeks. It has to keep going. So what will it be when a team's best player gets it? God forbid, what happens if Patrick Kane gets it? You still have to keep going. And Patrick Kane is the best player on the Blackhawks. I mean, look, everyone would love to see sports come back. Everyone would. But at a time that this world is currently in, sports is something that shouldn't be worried about. What needs to be worried about is the safety of the NHL personnel, players, coaches, trainers, and team personnel. And if we have to wait until the fall to get sports back, so be it. I personally would rather have sports back in full swing in the fall than back this summer with players, coaches, and team personnel scared for their lives about contracting this virus. Because the truth is, it's not safe. It really isn't, because you don't know where that virus is. Like, it's been shown, CDC reports, government press conferences, that you can carry the virus without even knowing. So what happens if the trainer comes in, has the virus, gets all the jerseys set up so that all the jerseys now have the virus on them, and every single player gets infected? You could be looking at a whole outbreak across the team and across the whole NHL. So there's a lot of uncertainty that goes into it, and you really just don't know. Alright, gonna go ahead and switch gears a little bit. The AHL has canceled the remainder of the regular season and playoffs. And in an article written by Scott Powers on The Athletic, Rutherford captain Tyler Sekera, brother of Dylan Sekera, stated that he realized that the cards were stacked against them to resume the season, but he was hopeful that with the four other North American major leagues moving forward, it was possible the AHL could start back up again. A day later, after this statement was issued, the AHL's Board of Governors voted to cancel the remainder of the 1920 regular season. The league then formally announced the cancellation on Monday, May 11th. And with the cancellation, the BMO Harris Bank Center, the Ice Hogs home arena, will now be closed for the near future, leaving many people without a steady job or income. And in an official statement from the executive director / general manager of Rockford Area Venues and Entertainment Authority, or for short, RAVE, Troy Flynn, "I think as the AHL consulted with the NHL and its members, it was a tough decision to come to. But it was the decision that made the most sense for the league to really close this chapter," and he's talking about COVID-19, "and start to look towards the future." But the big question for me is, what does that future look like? Because there's a lot of variables that will feed into the reopening of the AHL, NHL, all these North American leagues, and even the international leagues. First, the pandemic obviously needs to have died down, which it is starting to. And secondly, they would have to make sure all the players are healthy, and none of them are at risk for contracting the virus. Because one player could go and live with his family who has it, then they get it. One player could go out to the grocery store and get it. So you have to make sure everyone is quarantined without a risk of getting the virus, and make sure that all players are showing no symptoms. And third, all players, staff, and officials will need to feel safe playing again. Because if they don't feel safe, that's going to affect the play of all the players. If they don't feel safe, they're going to be more worried about the virus than they are the game. And that's going to lead to them not being focused on the game, obviously. And then it's not going to go well. The game is not going to be fun for the fans, not going to be fun for the players, and the score is probably going to be real freaking low. And after the cancellation of the season, the Ice Hogs end with a 29-32-2 record, just below the 500 mark, and they were getting pretty close to pushing for a Calder Cup playoffs spot, but obviously they did not make it there. Over the course of the season, they did have a couple injuries to Colin Delia, Kevin Lankin, and the Blackhawks called up a lot of players from Rockford over the course of the year, so obviously they didn't have their full roster there, which is, that's really what the AHL is about. You're always losing players, players coming in from the ECHL, and then players going up to the NHL, so you're always losing players, players that are coming in. So it's not really something to really worry about. The AHL is more for development, so the fact that because last year the Ice Hogs, Jeremy Colleton, led them to the conference final. But this year, they're under the 500 mark, and they're not even in the playoff spot when the season was canceled. So, the AHL and the farm team systems and the Ice Hogs, it's not really something that fans should worry about or look at because of the fact that those leagues are there for the development of the players. Players are constantly being called up, sent down, and then sent down to the ECHL and called up from the ECHL, all for the development of players trying to get to the NHL. So, not really something that fans should have to worry about, the fact that the Ice Hogs did end with the under 500 record. Alright, so finally getting to a little bit of Blackhawks news that's finally unrelated to the NHL or the AHL canceling or reopening. It's currently rumored that Colin Delia is going to take over the backup spot next year. So it leaves many questions for Malcolm Subban. Will he leave as a free agent? Will the Blackhawks re-sign him and send him down to the AHL? Because Malcolm Subban played 0 games with the Blackhawks this year. He played 1:10 when the trainers brought Crow for a concussion test because he was hit in the head. But other than that, Malcolm Subban played 0 this year. And you could see when Corey Crawford had that whole workload, he played a lot better than he did having to worry about competing against Robin Lehner. He really did. And for me, I see no upside of signing Malcolm Subban to another deal. They already have Colin Delia, and the Blackhawks will be looking for a starter, and that's not Malcolm Subban. But it does leave some questions for Corey Crawford's future with the Blackhawks. So now with Colin Delia reportedly taking over the backup spot, do they re-sign Crawford for another year or two as Colin Delia develops into a starter's role? Because last year when Colin Delia came in, when Crow was injured and he played with Cam Ward, Colin Delia showed that at times he can be a starter. And he's definitely showed he can be a starter in the AHL, an above average starter too. So he probably can be the backup in the NHL that the Blackhawks need him to be. But as he transitions into that role of being a starter, because that's exactly what the Blackhawks need, Crawford has stated that he wants to stay in Chicago and he wants to win here, he wants to raise his family here, but could they let Crow leave on free agency, and could they bring in a more younger, proven NHL goalie to share the workload with Delia, do kind of a half-and-half split, similar to the Thomas Greiss, Semyon Varlamov, and Greiss-Robin Lehner tandem in Long Island the last 2 years. Two guys around the same age, or maybe have that starter a little bit older than him, kind of share the workload, kind of do like a, maybe like a 50-35 kind of split there. You got a proven NHL goalie, a little bit younger, maybe 25, 26, come in, and he can play those 50 games, but you can also give those other 35 to Colin Delia to help him transition into that starting position that the Hawks are going to need him to be in the next couple of years. Because, like I said, last year he did show that he can be a starting goalie. He showed he has the attributes to be a starting goalie. So if the Blackhawks can transition him into that role over the next couple of years and still have a proven NHL goalie to be in front of him and guide him along the way, that could really help. So I'd love to hear what you guys would like to see the Hawks do at the goaltender position, because there are a lot of uncertainties here. So you can go ahead and send in your responses to shytownhockeypod@gmail.com or use any of the aforementioned contact options, and I'll also make sure to list them out once more at the end of the show. And then some of the final things regarding the Blackhawks I want to get into. I was looking at an Instagram account based on the Blackhawks, and I saw an interesting post. It asked which trade out of these three was the best in the last couple of years, or which of these trades was the best recent trade, kind of. The first one was Andrew Shaw to Montreal for a second-round pick, which ended up being Alex DeBrincat. Number two was Ryan Hartman to Nashville for a first-round pick, which turned out to be Nicholas Beaudin. And three was fifth-round pick to Los Angeles for Dominic Kubalik. So, my explanation of the three trades. So, the third one. Dominic Kubalik, he has had a great year in the NHL this year. And he was acquired for a great price. A fifth-round pick is something the Blackhawks definitely could have lived without. And they got a great, great player and playmaker out of that trade. He's made an immediate impact at the NHL level. He's proved he can be moved around the lineup, and he can still score and contribute. He played on the first line, the second line, and the third line this year, and he still ended up with 30 goals before the season was canceled. I mean, if the season wasn't canceled, he probably could have ended up with 35 to 40, possibly, in his rookie year. That speaks something. That is more goals than Artemi Panarin came in and scored. So you obviously have a great player here that is young, but he's also developed because he's 25, who is willing to be a part of the Blackhawks' next core group of players. After Seabrook's gone, after Kane is gone, after Taves is gone, they're going to need those players to step up and form that new core to be able to win Stanley Cups in the next coming years, and he can be one of those guys. So for the second trade, the Alex DeBrincat trade, he's proven that he will be a part of the Hawks' future core, but it took one of the best grinders in the league in Andrew Shaw, and it took another trade full of decent draft picks, including the second-round pick, to get him back in Chicago. For me, the trade ranks number two, because if the Blackhawks are worried so much about developing the organization with young guys, this, I don't think, was the way to go. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Andrew Shaw, but he's had a long concussion history in Montreal, and now once again in Chicago. And because of this trade and wanting to bring him back to Chicago, we had to give up Robin Leonard to reacquire that second-round pick that we gave to Montreal in order to get Andrew Shaw back. And on top of that, Andrew Shaw was out almost the whole season. He played, 10-15 games before he was then out with a concussion in November, and he was shut down for the whole season. So that's obviously something that they want to develop this team, yet you go and give away a second round pick for a player who's already he's already a good number of years into his career, and our team was at the point where we didn't exactly need him, and he was out almost the whole season, like I said, so he didn't make an impact because he wasn't on the ice. So that's something that I think that trade was not the best, having to give up those picks for Andrew Shaw to come back. So if you wanted him to come back, you shouldn't have traded him in the first place. So now ranking third, the Hartman to Nashville for the first round pick, which become Nicholas Beaudin. And it'll be hard to judge this trade at the moment because Beaudin, the player picked with the first rounder, he hasn't played an NHL game, but his future does look promising, while Ryan Hartman's really doesn't. He's up in Minnesota right now. He's bounced around teams since being traded. Nashville, Philadelphia, now Minnesota. And his production isn't up at all. He's not really making headlines. He's scoring a couple goals, having a couple assists. And while Beaudin hasn't played a game yet, like I said, his future looks great. And Hartman's doesn't at all. Hartman produced with the Blackhawks. He was a good third-line, fourth-line player with the Blackhawks. But ever since he was traded away, his future looks terrible. And Beaudin now coming in with a good future, a future that looks promising, that's that could very well turn out a win for the Blackhawks. So I've now listed out all my explanations for all these trades, and personally, my favorite trade out of all of these three is the Dominik Kubalík trade, because like I said, he came in ready to play in the NHL. He produced at a crazy rate for a rookie, and has proved he can be a part of the long-term core. So that's why that trade ranks first out of all of these for me. So you guys, make sure to send in your favorite trade and why to shytownhockeypod@gmail.com or any other contact options. And I promise you, on the next episode or the episode after that, I will try and fit you guys in and feature you guys on the show with which trade was your favorite and why it was. So, to wrap up the show here, I got two fan questions left. We have one from Ryan McBride on Instagram. He wants to know my thoughts on Dylan Strome. So, thanks for the question, Ryan. My thoughts on Dylan Strome is, I think he can be a really good player, or he can be a very bad player, because last year he proved that he can score a good amount of points with the Blackhawks. He's a decent centerman. He's not that good at the faceoff dot though, so he's got his ups and downs. But he showed that he has chemistry with Alex DeBrincat, and he can at least put some production in. He showed he can put up 50 points last year. This year he put up around 35, I believe it was, before the season was canceled, which isn't bad, but that's nowhere near where he was a year ago. And if the Blackhawks are going to get better, they're going to need that production from guys like Dylan Strome, who's currently playing on the second line with Alex DeBrincat and Patrick Kane. So Dylan Strome, I think he can go one of two ways. Those are my thoughts on Dylan Strome. And last listener question I have here is from @LoseTheJelly on Instagram. He asked, what is your favorite Hawks decade and why? So my favorite Hawks decade is probably the last decade, where they won the three Stanley Cups championships, because it was just so iconic. And now being in the modern era with technology and social media and everything, you get a lot more behind-the-scenes footage, being able to see all the things going on behind the scenes, and then three Stanley Cups in 5 years. That's a tremendous mark that I don't think anybody will ever surpass. I mean, 3 and 5 is crazy to me. So that's certainly my favorite Hawks decade, just because of how many Stanley Cups were won, the technology, how we were able to get behind the scenes footage of everything with the Stanley Cup championships video. That's certainly my favorite Hawks decade. So yeah. All right. So that's going to go ahead and do it for this edition of the Chi-Town Hockey Podcast. Remember to get in touch with the podcast or ask any listener questions. Head to @ChiTownPod on Twitter, @ChiTownHockey.pod on Instagram. You can go ahead and visit my Blackhawks-related Instagram page, @ChiBlackhawksTalk, if you would like. You can also follow my personal Twitter account, @JakeGolden777, or send an email to ChiTownHockeyPod@gmail.com.